Welcome to episode 4 of Hidden Noise. I am Abby Sandler.
And I'm Rebecca Siegel. And we're shaking things up a little. Today's show, as usual, will start with our go-see. But instead of just giving you one show, we're going to give you a whole roundup of stellar exhibitions at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Merry Christmas, guys.
And up next, Abby will be joined by Joe Melillo, the executive producer of BAM, to discuss his 34-year run with the leading performing arts center based in Brooklyn. And then we'll hit him up with the Even 8.
But we're going to go ahead and start in Manhattan.
As discussed, this week we're changing things up. We're hoping that you have some time off over the next month, maybe the day after Christmas or a Friday night you'd like to celebrate this holiday season. And for that special occasion, we're going to recommend the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
An oldie but goodie.
Did you know that the Met is open until 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday nights? There's a massive Christmas tree to get you in the holiday spirit, and you get to decide how much you pay as an entrance fee.
But more importantly to us, there are six excellent shows of varying size.
The Met's one of the largest collections in the world. There are 3 campuses and over 17,000 objects in its collection. So we're going to break this down as easily as possible.
While you're fresh, head straight up the grand staircase, turn left, walk for about a mile, making your way to the exhibit Michelangelo, Divine Draftsman and Designer.
I was loath to recommend this exhibition. It is crowded, and you do not need a podcast to tell you about an artist made immemorial by the Ninja Turtles. But here's the bottom line. The collection of absolutely stunning drawings will never be in one place at one time again. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it is unbelievable what the Met convinced people to lend. These works on paper are super fragile, and while I think it's disgusting, you're allowed to take photos.
I'm a little less cynical, so I'm going to say that the bottom line here is that Michelangelo is, in fact, a better draftsman than anyone ever was before him and ever will be again. He draws men, women, architecture, war, biblical scenes. Literally, he draws everything better than everyone else, before or since. So admire the truly shocking sensitivity he has to an arm or even a window.
The architectural drawings are absolutely a highlight.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your highlight wasn't the digital recreation of the Sistine Chapel ceiling?
Not quite, but there is an incredible quantity of work to see and rooms to wander. So after that, you are going to be a bit weary. Walk just down the hall, find the David Hockney retrospective, literally 3 doors down. Hockney is 80 years old and his entire career is on view. Focus on the first few rooms if you want to admire his earliest depictions of gay men made while homosexuality was actually still illegal in the UK.
Then move on for swimming pools, fabulous couples in LA, and the most sumptuous landscapes made with experimental acrylic paint. Mourn the insufficient number of photo collages, but relish in the joyful act of looking at these paintings.
Then get the hell out of there. Walk to the ground floor toward American decorative arts, all the way to the north side of the museum.
And by north side, we mean the farthest point away from where you currently are inside the museum to find a show called Gilded Age Drawings for my personal favorite work on view at the Met today, a gorgeous John Singer Sargent.
The show's small, 2 rooms, it'll be empty, but that doesn't mean anything. It's a very charming collection of beautiful works on paper from the late 19th and early 20th century. And there's a dreamy Winslow Homer.
Then walk one room deeper into the museum and see Sarah Berman's closet. Cecily LaForest recommended it in the Even 8 a few weeks ago, and we concur. See this gem? It literally takes 5 minutes.
Now leave the building. Get some fresh air. You've done a lot. You can quit now, or you can walk to 75th and Madison to the Met Broyer.
I'm sorry, Rebecca, could you repeat that one more time for everyone out there who is still pronouncing this museum's name incorrectly?
Yeah, you heard me. Breuer, the Met's second location at the old Whitney building. Your ticket from 82nd Street works here too, so don't trash it. Walk in and get a new sticker and go immediately to the basement for a really good coffee.
Or a really good glass of wine. The restaurant here, Flora, is one of our favorites. Come to think of it, maybe even have lunch or dinner before taking the elevator to the 3rd floor for Edvard Munch.
We're going to burst your bubble quick. Munch's iconic work, The Scream, is not included in this exhibition, but it does not matter.
I'd go as far to say that The Scream is almost irrelevant here because these works are truly special. The content is pretty dark, but his sense of color is arguably unparalleled. Even Jasper John stole from him.
And then walk down the stairs and see some gorgeous color photography by Raghubir Singh, one of India's most important post-war artists.
You have now seen 6 shows. You are officially cultured.
And we've officially edited the Met.
But if you're less inclined to be on the Upper East Side and more of a Brooklyn girl, we understand, and we have a very special guest for you today.
We are thrilled to be joined by Joe Melillo, executive producer of the Brooklyn Academy of Music. This is Joe's 34th year at BAM and his 19th in his current role.
BAM holds a very special place in my heart.
So first a discussion between Abby and Joe, his career and BAM, and then Joe's Even 8, our version of the Proust questionnaire with his recommendations for shows to see, places to go, and New York's finest cultural attractions to keep on your radar.
Joe, we want to start by welcoming you to Hidden Noise. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I assume most people listening know and are familiar with BAM, as it is nothing short of a landmark New York City cultural institution. But I'm wondering if you could quickly, for those a little less familiar, discuss BAM's mission as one of New York's leading performing arts institutions.
Certainly. First of all, I want to start off by saying the formal name is the Brooklyn Academy of Music. We use the acronym BAM, BAM, to identify us. So our brand is BAM. It's America's oldest continually operating performing arts center. The first performance was in 1861, when Brooklyn was a separate city from the 5 borough structure. And the current main building opened in 1908, and at that time, Brooklyn was part of the 5 borough system. The fact that distinguishes us is that our mission is to be a home for adventurous artists, audiences, and ideas.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you joined BAM in 1983 as the founding director of the Next Wave Festival.
That is, I can agree with that fact, that I'm a dinosaur, as in my own vocabulary. Yes, 1983 was the first Next Wave Festival.
And I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about the Next Wave Festival.
Sure.
How that started and what the intentions were with that and how it distinguishes itself from the rest of BAM's programming.
I know this is going to sound very strange to your listeners, but in 1983, individuals, New Yorkers, names like Laurie Anderson, Philip Glass, Robert Wilson, could not get their large-scale work produced or presented in the United States. So the Next Wave Festival, in its founding, was a potential answer to that cultural problem. And so Harvey Lichtenstein, who hired me to create the Next Wave Festival and to produce it, wanted to dedicate his large-scale, and still today, the Howard Gilman Opera House seats 2,000 people. That's large-scale. And so 30 Lafayette Avenue is in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, is where the main building is situated. And that is true today, that the festival goes from September to mid-December. It's now both local and global in artistic form. And that gives you a sense of the scale of the artistic initiative and the endeavor. It is to be the place where all New Yorkers can see the most progressive, innovative performing arts productions from the global and local communities.
Have there been any highlights over the years?
Well, the most important highlight to share is Einstein on the Beach, which is the creation of Robert Wilson and Philip Glass. And it first was done at the Met Opera in 1976, then done at BAM in 1984, and then done at BAM again in 1992, and the final production was in 2012. It's a large-scale, mythic, non-narrative, very visual, very musical music theater work.
And as you're saying, BAM has very successfully established a cultural identity for itself as a presenter of, as you said, cutting edge, often international and always avant-garde performance, no matter what the medium, language or discipline. It carved out a very specific space for a very specific kind of art. What I'm wondering is, was there some sort of catalytic moment where you or perhaps Harvey or Karen Brooks Hopkins realized that there was this appetite for this kind of performance in New York City?
Well, now that I can say that I have been at BAM for 34 years, I can look back onto, I think the signifying year was 1987. And why I pointed that date or to the Next Wave Festival of 1987, because that's the opening of the what is called now the BAM Harvey Theater to house the legendary Peter Brook production of the Mahabharata. So that opened the Next Wave Festival, and we closed in December of 1987 with the opera Nixon in China by John Adams, directed by Peter Sellers. So it was like this huge artistic animal kind of landed in Brooklyn and took the entire city and the country by storm.
And it's often, I mean, we were just talking about this, how when you ask someone what their first experience with BAM was or their first Next Wave Festival, it's often some really difficult Czech or Russian play or opera dance performance. And it usually sucks them in. But what I'm wondering is, over the years, how have you dealt with these more difficult pieces and performances? Like, what's the risk factor involved, and how do you know how something is going to land?
Listening to you carefully, I want to say the compliment is to the New Yorkers, because fundamentally, we as New Yorkers have the curiosity gene. And if you can catalytically ignite that curiosity, then you want to be in the room. And that is what has happened with the as I said, this is the, over three decades. We're now enjoying this autumn, the 35th Next Wave Festival. And each year, I know there are people who wait for the brochure to be delivered to their mailbox or to get the, the website gets onto their computer.
Guilty.
but it is true. It is, but on to balance that out, I think it's very similar to how people wait for the New York International Film Festival to get launched and the opening of the Met Opera. These are signifying factors, cultural factors of autumn in New York City. And that's the important thing to share.
And I also remember reading something that you said that really stuck with me about needing an architecture to house the kind of artistic issues and ideas that BAM wanted to pursue. And obviously, as any New Yorker might know, you guys have undergone a series of renovations and additions to the campus and institution. And what effects have these various changes had on programming over the years in terms of what opportunities have become available and what spaces have begun to be favored?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, because in 2012, we added the Richard B. Fisher Building, and specifically the Fishman Space, which is a 250-seat completely flexible theater. It's a game changer in this regard, that I am now able to curate from other disciplines rather than the traditional. So if we say the traditional performing arts forms are theater, dance, music, and opera, then now I have a space in which, because it is the 21st century, I can invite a visual artist to come in to do a performative work. I can invite performance artists who use space differently than theater, dance, and music art forms are used. The second factor is I don't determine the spatial relationship. I invite an artist to come into the Fishman Space, and I ask them to select the seating arrangements because we have that flexibility. And today there's a different relationship between performers and spectators. So that's my usage of the space in the autumn for the Next Wave Festival. But then it goes to my education department. They finally have the appropriate venue for student populations, for families to be able to use the appropriate space. And then when they have blocked out where they want the user space, then we're able to rent it to other not-for-profit cultural organizations in and around the borough of Brooklyn. So that's the difference. It's about reaching deeply into the community with like multiple tentacles.
And on the note of community, obviously we'd be remiss not to mention the fact that Brooklyn and its landscape have obviously rapidly changed over the past several decades and even over months at this point. But
let's use the word profoundly, Jane.
Thank you. Yes. But between the changing landscape of Brooklyn and BAM, can you talk a little about BAM's role in this transformation, especially in regard to downtown Brooklyn and sure. Fort Greene?
Yeah. Important in my discussion is to reference the BAM Rose Cinemas because it's part of our new identity. And I bring that up in relationship to this gentrification, the building of large groups of buildings that are rental buildings as well as condominium buildings in and around specifically Fort Greene. I'm not ignoring what has happened in Williamsburg and Greenpoint and Bushwick, et cetera, but if I address our immediate community, it is extraordinary to have these buildings first, so there's a new relationship that you have. Because as I said, going back to the main building where the administrative office is in that 1908 building. You go out the door, you're looking at the 21st century. And the first introduction that those new renters and tenants have to BAM is coming to the cinemas. So we love to say, you know, they can come downstairs in their pajamas and go to the cinemas.
Pretty appealing.
Because it's that close. And it tends to be, for us, the youngest audience for BAM's work is the cinema buyers. So that's the big change. I mean, that you can see what the future is going to be because that's just the beginning of the growth that's going to happen in the borough. And the future for Brooklyn is extraordinarily bright because it's the largest geographic landmass of the five boroughs, largest, you know, demographic and population. So this is just going to keep on growing.
And finally, you've recently announced that you will be, after 34 years, leaving BAM at the end of next year. And it's said that once you leave, BAM will officially enter a post-Harvey era. And for those of you who don't know, Harvey Lichtenstein was Joe's predecessor and former president of BAM. But I guess what I just want to finish on is what kind of effect do you think that will have on programming and beyond that outlook and the future of performance in New York City?
Well, I think that, you know, again, there is a great history of many years of the Next Wave Festival. And as we just talk about, you know, again, it's a platform for launching and inviting innovation, progressiveness in the performing arts, three theaters operating simultaneously. That is what my successor will inherit. But BAM 2 has growth on its horizon of two additional construction projects that will enhance the portfolio of BAM, which makes it the right time for me to exit, having made my contribution to BAM and to New York City, and to hand it over to new energy, new ideas, and new possibilities with these additional spaces. So it's all very positive.
Joe, thank you so much. And I will finish off by encouraging everyone to get tickets for whatever performances are left of the Next Wave Festival.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
this week's Even 8, our version of the Proust questionnaire, we are very lucky to be joined with Joe Melillo, who just spoke to Abby about the state of BAM, the Brooklyn Academy of Music, its growth, its future, and also importantly, its history as one of the longest performing arts spaces in the United States and one of the most progressive. So we are very lucky to talk to Joe about the things that are on his radar that we think should be on every New Yorker's radar. Because as we all know, living in this city, it's fun to have your own opinions, and it's even more fun to steal everyone else's. So we are going to get started by asking you a few questions.
Go for it.
So Joe, what do you think of all the cultural goings on in New York right now? What is the most underrated event or happening?
I think, you know, again, I'm a man of the theater, so I think that M. Butterfly, the new version, is not being appreciated for the absolute astonishing achievement that David Henry Hwang did in having retooled the play, Julie Taymor's production, It tells the story clearly, whereas the first version of the play was, when you left the theater, you were trying to put it all together, that now the playwright went back and solved all those issues.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Clive Owen is starring in it, and I would have thought that some of his star power would have sort of propelled a bigger conversation about that change in narrative.
Oh, you know, that's so interesting. Yeah, I mean, he is a gifted actor. And yeah, I would have I am surprised that we haven't had more focus on him. It's just like a strange thing that's happened about that play.
Well, I think it's also funny because obviously, I think for most of us, the last reason that Julie Taymor was really in the news was sort of some of the failures around Spider-Man.
That's true.
I think that, you know, for many of us, obviously, while she has had so many accomplishments, Lion King is very much many, many years ago. And I wonder sort of how his star power and her sort of involvement has not sort of created a bigger push toward that.
Yeah, no, it's a conundrum. I mean, I really do mean, that's why your question is so interesting to answer, because I watch and look at an avid reader of multiple publications, primarily about the theater and the performing arts in general. And yeah, it's really off the grid.
We also have to ask, although we don't want to get you in any trouble, if there is something on your radar that you think is overrated right now in New York.
You know, I don't think there's anything that's overrated. I think, you know, there's so many opportunities. Let's start by saying, you know, this city is a vibrant reservoir of art, in all art in the macro. So it's performing arts, visual arts, etc. And you can't do it all. That's the other issue. As a New Yorker, you just like, oh, this is what it means to live here. You can't do it all. You can't see or experience it all. So again, you know, I think you look at the future and you go, well, there's going to be an island in the middle of the Hudson River, you know? It's like, okay, let's go. So
what do you find to be the most exciting recent development in New York's cultural landscape?
Yeah, I think the Shed is. I think in Hudson Yards, because I've had the privilege of seeing the plans for it. I don't get over to that part of Manhattan in the autumn. So I know it's the shovel went in the ground, and I know that there's a structure being built there. But I think the possibilities of what they're going to be able to do and how the shell can remove itself from the harness of the actual building and be a cover for this outdoor performances. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
What is the most important book or film you have seen recently?
Well, that's easy to answer because Arundhati Roy's The Ministry of Utmost Happiness is what I just finished. So she's exceptional and such a compassionate, original story. So that's highest on my list right now.
And if you could be an expert on any subject other than dance, theater, opera, and all of performance, what would it be?
When I come back in another lifetime, I want to be a cultural anthropologist. Because one of the things that you should know about my life at BAM is that I have got a PhD in global geography. And what it has taught me, because I have been to places like Kazakhstan. And
a lot
and
of things are falling into place for me right
and,
now.
And that you go, I don't know these traditions of these wonderful places. You know, I've been to Southeast Asia and every country, and I'm doing a Cambodian project as part of the Next Wave Festival. And you just want to know so much about Asian and African and Middle Eastern and Oceanic cultures.
Where do you take someone in New York that you'd like to impress?
I take them for lunch at the Century Association on West 43rd Street because I'm a member.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more. Is the food edible there?
Oh my God, they have a chef that's spectacular there.
What Rebecca's really asking is, could you please bring her?
No, I'm just, when I think of these sort of old institutional clubs in New York, I think of these grand architectures and the smell of chlorine from the University Club and places like that. And I think of a fantastic martini and the worst chicken in the world.
That doesn't happen at the Century Association. I can tell you, I will invite you to come and be my guest so that you can actually compare and contrast.
Fair enough. Thank you very much. I may take you up on that.
Where do you go to be alone in New York?
My apartment. There's nothing more important to me. Sunday morning, black coffee, and the New York Times. I don't move from my sofa at all until it's obligatory brunch meeting or for lunch, etc. But no, that's the time where I regenerate.
I have to say, it's amazing how many people that we've spoken to who have spoken about their apartments with a sort of reverence of home that I think gets underrated for people who don't know New York well, how important these spaces are in terms of a respite from what is essentially hose-to-mouth amounts of culture at all times.
Yes, I mean, the amount of, you know, again, referencing, I've been at BAM for a long time, so I've interacted with people who come to BAM for the first job, entry-level position, and they leave. They're not leaving BAM, they're leaving New York because of the overstimulation. You have to be preconditioned to accept how much you're bombarded with sound and color and people and experiences. Not everyone is ready for that.
It is almost the end of 2017. We are very much looking forward to the new year. Is there something on your radar for the start of 2018 that you think we should all know about?
Long Day's Journey into Night with Jeremy Irons and Leslie Manville, directed by Richard Eyre in the Harvey Theater this spring. Jeremy Irons is simply sensational. And if you've never seen Leslie Manville on the stage or in film, she's riveting as Mary Tyrone.
And when does the production open?
In May.
Fantastic. So we will encourage all of our listeners to either purchase tickets immediately or at least put some sort of calendar alert in Google so that they get their hands on those tickets as soon as possible. Well, we all thank you so much, Joe, for joining us today. We are very grateful for your suggestions, and we will encourage everyone to try the Century Club if they can find an invitation as generous as yours.
Thank you both very much.
We are absolutely delighted that we were joined by Joe Melillo today for both Critical Conversations and The Even Eight. Thanks very much to Abby for having that conversation with him. And we recommend that you all check out the programming for early 2018 at BAM. Until then, head to the Met and enjoy New York.